Spring break is in full swing, and a nice trip to warm and sunny Florida is on the minds of a lot of people, especially here in New England, where we've endured one of the worst winters ever. But in the early 1990s, too many people used other words to describe their Florida vacations, words like dangerous and harrowing. From the Here and Now contributor WLRN in Miami, Wilson Sayre brings us this story of when Florida was called Death Trap Under the Palms, and how the state's reaction to that reputation had some very serious consequences for teenage criminals.
It's an early morning in September 1993. Miami homicide detective Jerry Green gets out of his patrol car at a fresh crime scene. A red Toyota Corolla is stopped alongside the guardrail. It's beat up, paint scraped off, dents all over. The driver is dead after being shot in the back, and his wife stands nearby, quietly, in shock.
She was showing me paperwork indicating that he had just got here from Germany, just got off an airplane, just got in the rental car. And I was starting to put pieces together, and as best she could, she was describing that they were having problems with a big yellow vehicle that was like trying to force them to stop.
German tourist Uwe Rekebrand and his wife, Catherine, were on a belated honeymoon together. They'd landed in Miami just 2 hours before. Now, a little after midnight, Uwe's dead on the warm Miami pavement.
We classified it the shot heard around the world.
Uwe Rekebrand was the eighth tourist murdered in Florida in less than a year. And it was an escalation of a problem that had existed in Florida for decades. Tourists were the perfect target for robbers. Rental cars were easily identifiable. But then in October of 1992, a British tourist was shot and killed in a hotel parking garage in Orlando. 2 months later, a German tourist was killed in Fort Myers, then a Canadian in Lake Worth.
One man dies, his girlfriend is wounded.
A second Canadian in Sunny Isles, a Venezuelan in Brickell, a German in Homestead.
We've seen something like that in the television in Germany.
Another German in Liberty City.
Just arriving from Berlin, just leaving the airport.
And then the Rekebrand murder, and the story blew up.
They were on their way to their Miami Beach hotel.
Driving away from Miami Airport was
killed by a gunman.
Shot to death by two guys in a van.
In a van or truck that had repeatedly
bumped his rental car from behind.
News of the killing was broadcast in Germany.
In Miami, in Weststadt, Florida.
The police from Miami.
A Miami street and two of its criminals once again takes the life of a German tourist.
Once again, violent crime has tarnished Florida's image.
Just a decade after the cocaine cowboys era, after Miami had become America's murder capital, once again, Miami seemed lawless. Four of the eight murders were German tourists. The German government issued a travel advisory about Florida. Germans were told specifically not to go to Miami. Merritt Stierheim was head of tourism in Miami then.
I remember Der Spiegel had a picture of a German tourist laying an I-95 with a sheet over them and the blood and everything else.
Der Spiegel is one of the most popular magazines in Germany.
And when they ran the story, my memory is that we lost almost overnight 67% of the German market.
Officials had tried to deal with this problem in small ways. Better lighting, unmarked rental cars. But they didn't save Uwe Rekebrand.
They're hunters. They're hunting for robbery victims. It could have been your family. It could have been anybody in the community.
That's Detective Jerry Green the day of the murder. And he says with all the media attention, the tip line was ringing off the hook.
We were starting to divvy out the tips. There's a vehicle over here, a van over there, a yellow one, a white one, a beige one. We didn't care what it was. We're going to check them all out.
Within 48 hours, the police had three suspects in custody. The ringleader of the trio was 20-year-old Patsy Jones. She'd just gotten out of jail, and she was the one who pulled the trigger of the sawed-off shotgun that killed Uwe Rekebrand. Detective Jerry Green brings her into the police station. He strikes up some small talk and asks her what kind of movie she likes.
Now, at that point, if I was her, I would have said, like, Bambi or some Disney movie.
Something innocuous to try and seem innocent. Instead,
she said, "Oh, gangster, that's my nickname."
Jones was unrepentant. She had a long rap sheet. She'd been a criminal since she was a teenager. And for the Rekebrand murder, she got life in prison. In many ways, Patsy Jones became the criminal archetype of the tourist murders, hardened career criminals who started young. And they had a word for these people, super predators.
They sound like the fact that these were bad people that were doing bad things, and that they should be treated like adults.
Willie Logan was a state senator at the time. He didn't completely buy the super predator idea, but was getting a lot of pressure to act on it from his constituents in Miami-Dade County. The thinking was that super predators were born bad, and their numbers were growing.
And that there was no way to rehab those individuals. And that if you murdered someone or attempted to murder someone, and if you had already shown some type of criminal activity, then there was no hope.
In response to the Torres murders, the Florida legislature passed a package of laws toughening sentencing in the state to deal with super predators. They did away with maximum sentences for certain crimes. They gave prosecutors the power to charge 14 and 15-year-olds as adults.
We are a tourist state, and Florida lawmakers were immediately ready to react. And the answer was more kids in adult prison.
That's Paolo Anino. And a decade after these laws passed, he was co-director of the Children's Advocacy Center at Florida State University. One day, one of his students came across this kid who, at 15 years old, received 4 life sentences for crimes where no one was killed.
I was really taken back. I was like, well, that's probably a mistake in the data.
But it wasn't a mistake. The kid's name was Kenneth Young. He was from Tampa, Florida. And his mom's drug dealer had roped Young into a series of armed robberies. Witnesses say the drug dealer was the aggressor. He held the gun. He threatened people's lives. Kenneth took the money. For his part in the crimes, Kenneth Young got 4 life sentences without parole. He never killed anyone. So Anino went state by state to see how many other cases there were like this one.
This was a practice in the state of Florida, and we were an anomaly. We discovered back then that in the entire country, there was 109, and Florida had 77. We were the bellwether state of a very bad social experiment.
You could argue that this was the intent of the laws passed after the Torres murders. Kenneth's behavior was perhaps the sign of a super predator, a future Patsy Jones. And imprisoning him for life may have prevented a murder. But in 2009, the U.S. Supreme Court took up the case of Terrence Graham. Like Kenneth Young, he was a teenager, convicted of armed robbery, serving a life without parole sentence, having never killed anyone.
We'll hear argument first this morning in case 087412, Graham versus Florida. Mr. Gowdy?
Brian Gowdy was Graham's lawyer.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, sentencing an adolescent to life without any possibility of parole condemns him to die in prison, and rejects any hope that he will change for the better. This sentence cruelly ignores the inherent qualities of youth and the differences between adolescents and adults.
The Supreme Court agreed with Gowdy and ruled that this practice Florida pioneered was cruel and unusual. In essence, it said you have to treat Kenneth Young as Kenneth Young, not as a potential Patsy Jones, as the 15-year-old armed robber he was, not the 20-year-old murderer he might have become.
The Graham case is the Brown v. Board of Education for Juvenile Law.
Again, Paolo Anino.
It really changed the way we are looking at children. To hold children in the exact same way as adults makes children mini adults, and that's irrational. Irrational in a scientific sense, irrational in a moral sense.
15 years earlier, the Sunshine State had been splashed across international headlines for being a dangerous and lawless state. Florida's solution to that problem put it back in the spotlight, this time as the national leader in cruel and unusual sentencing of teenagers. In trying to fix one perception problem, Florida had created a whole new problem.
This is Graham against Florida.
Graham versus Florida.
Graham versus Florida.
Florida, really only one of sort of small minority of states that has most of the juveniles.
77 in Florida alone.
Florida leads the nation in meeting out life terms without parole for juveniles convicted of non-homicide.
Most of those teenagers in Florida have been resentenced. Kenneth Young got 30 more years. Some were released, others got 20, 40 years. One got 120 years. Whether or not that's constitutional is in the courts now. For Here and Now, I'm Wilson Sayre in Miami.
And thanks also to the Lynn and Lewis Wilson II Florida Moving Image Archive for some of the sound used in this story. You're listening to Here and Now.